Devate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text Number 2, answers by citing the Lord's version.
Bahurupa iva bhati mayya bahurupaya ramamano guneshvasya mamaham iti manyate bahurupa iva bhati mayaya bahu rupaya ramamano guneshvasya mamaham iti manyate bahu rupa iva bhati mayaya bahu rupaya Ramamanyo guneshvasya Mamaham iti manyate.
Please chant.
Rupaya Ramamano Guneshvyasya Mamaham Iti Manyate Mayaya Bahu Rupaya Ramamano
ladies. Anyone else? Synonyms. Bahurupa. Multiforms. Iva. As it were. Stop for a moment. Does everybody know what the word as it were means? Who doesn't? Raise your hand. Everybody knows? Okay, Prabhu, tell me what as it were means. No, I asked. Who does not know? So if you don't know, raise your hand. Who doesn't know? Somebody volunteer. What does as it, sorry, what does as it were mean? It's there for a reason. Everybody knows, but nobody's answering. Come on, let's have an answer. Go ahead, Prabhu. No. Doesn't mean that at all. It's an idiom, by the way. Anybody want to? Try. Okay, as it were means so to speak. In other words, if you were saying, this is the way it was, as it were, means so to speak, but not necessarily exactly as it is. Okay? So to speak, the way we say it, but not necessarily definite, true, and exact. Okay, the reason I'm asking these questions is that if we don't know the meanings of these words, then how will we know the meanings of the sentences? So I want everybody to know these are great sentences that Prabhupada is giving us, and he's using this idiom, as it were, which means so to speak, in a manner of speaking. So, next, abhati, manifested, mayaya, by the influence of the exterior energy. Bahu rupaya, in multifarious forms. Brahma manaha, enjoying as it were. Here it is again, the same word, as it were. Not completely, not exactly, but so to speak. Guneshu, in the modes of different qualities. Asyan, if the of the external energy. Mama, mine. Aham, I. Iti, thus. Manyate, thinks. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. The illusioned living entity appears in so many forms offered by the external energy of the Lord, while enjoying while enjoying in the modes of material nature. The encaged living entity misconceives thinking in terms of I and mine. By the way, that word is not engaged, it's encaged. Like a lion in a cage. So, in effect, what Prabhupada is saying, we're all like animals in a cage, and the cage is made of the material energy. So it's got us trapped. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The different forms of the living entities are different dresses offered by the illusory external energy of the Lord according to the modes of nature the living being desires to enjoy. Sorry, time out for head adjusting. The external material energy is represented by her three modes, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, give me an example of goodness. Just one or two words, that's all. Just raise your hand and I'll call you. Nobody? Yeah, go ahead, Prabhu. What is he saying? Goodness? Again, an example. Give me an example of somebody in goodness, doing something in goodness. Like a what? A philosopher? Yeah, okay. If he's telling the right philosophy, then it's goodness. But we have so many wrong philosophies circulating throughout this world that it may not be so much goodness. A person who's a doctor or a dentist, you know, they're doing something salutary, something useful, something beneficial to relieve pain and suffering. So that's generally goodness. That's not pure goodness, but it's goodness. Okay? And then how about the mode of passion? Go ahead, Prabhu. Businessman. That depends on what business he's doing. If he's doing very churchly business, it may not be passion. He may be talking about God. But it becomes passion when we compete with one another. I want to be better than you. I want to be bigger than you. I want to be faster than you. It's this whole idea of competition. That's what passion is all about. So we should be able to identify it when we see a person. You know, he's looking at somebody and he's wondering if somebody's getting ahead of him. That's all passion, okay? And ignorance, which I hope won't be happening in this class. Anybody like to volunteer that one? Come on. But what is ignorance? A what? A butcher? Well, kind of. Ignorance is very sleepy. lazy, indolent, indifferent, uncaring, thoughtless. This is the mode of ignorance. When you don't want to study, you don't want to learn, you don't want to be enlightened. That's all ignorance, okay? I want to go to sleep. You've only slept 12 hours. I need another 12. This is ignorance, okay? Prabhupada always remarked on this point that, you know, the devotee said, well, you know, I already slept 5-6 hours. So Prabhupada said, so? What is 5 or 6 hours? Why can't you sleep 4 hours? Get it down to 3 hours if possible. Of course, don't kill yourself doing it, but try to get it down so that you spend more time in Krishna conscious activity and less time in mayic activity. So even in the material nature, there is a chance of an independent choice by the living entity. And according to his choice, the material energy offers him different varieties of material bodies. It's fascinating. There are 900,000 varieties of material bodies in the water, 2 million vegetable bodies, 1,100,000 worms and reptiles, 1 million forms of birds, 3 million different bodies of what? Anybody know? Beasts, you know, like cows and buffaloes and like that. And 400,000, what's the last one? Human beings, that's right. And within those 400,000 human beings, there are so many different of within that 400,000. We have black ones, we have red ones, we have yellow human beings. We have little human beings, we have tall human beings, so many different ones, and yet all classified as human beings because of their eyes and nose and etc. Altogether, there are 8,400,000 varieties of bodies in different planets of the universe. And the living entity is traveling by so many transmigrations according to different modes of enjoying spirit within himself. So let's go back to the word transmigration. Who knows the meaning of transmigration? Prabhupada uses it over and over again. If you don't look it up in the dictionary, then what's the point of reading it? Transmigration. Come on, I want no guesses. I want an exact meaning. Please. Come on, somebody must have it. Nobody knows. You don't have to be afraid. I'm not going to kick you out of the class. Please. Now, okay, transmigration. Trans means across. And migration means across to a place. So when you crossed, for example, very often they say on the news that so many thousands of people have migrated to such and such a country. That means they have left from one place and they've gone to another place. So a transmigration in this case means that we go from one body, such as the ones we have now, but in another 60 years or 50 years or 100 years, hopefully not in any of us, we'll all go back to the spiritual world and not transmigrate to another material body, only to do it again and again and again and again. So transmigration, it can be endless, or we can put an end to it in this particular life. And if we follow the principles that have been given to us by Srila Prabhupada, by Lord Krishna, by our great saints and sages, if we follow meaning not just by reading it, follow meaning doing it. There's an old saying, do it, don't just think about it. And if we do it, then it becomes a part of our nature. And if it becomes a part of our nature, then the characteristics that are born of that nature manifest through us. So we then have those characteristics. And those characteristics become precursors of God realization, self-realization, because they are loaded with virtues, goodness and kindness and sweetness and love and affection and patience and tolerance and so many of the nice qualities of a Brahmin. Okay? Yeah. The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires. And the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. The tiger wanted to enjoy the blood of another animal, and therefore, by the grace of the Lord, the material energy supplied him the body of the tiger with facilities for enjoying blood from another animal. So what are the chief facilities of the tiger for getting blood? Go ahead. Got loud. Everybody has teeth. Yes, big, big teeth. Sharp ones, too. What else? No. Yeah, that's good. Claws? Anything else? What about the powerful body that it has? I mean, it takes down a deer quite easily. It takes down even another lion not so easily. But they have incredibly strong bodies, the lions and tigers. When they're little babies, they're so cute. Not when they get older, though. Okay, so, you know. And the living entity is traveling by so many transmigrations, according to, again, transmigration, going from one place like here, Los Angeles, I die here, and then my next place is Hawaii, because I've been dreaming of getting on that surfboard in Hawaii and Maui, and I just wanted to play, and then I'm born in Hawaii, Maui, and I come from parents who are surfers. That's how it happens. Comes, as Prabhupada so nicely puts it, through desire. Nothing comes without desire. Even in one particular body, the living entity changes from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to youth, from youth to old age, and from old age to another body. What? How does that verse go? The body, soul. Somebody say the English. Yes. Yes. As the body soul passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Okay? The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires, and the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. Yeah, sometimes human beings like blood. I was one of them. Yeah, don't laugh. When my mother used to, this goes way back before, you know, yoga and bhakti yoga. When my mother used to prepare these, you know, sirloin steaks and porterhouse steaks and those kind of things, though she used to prepare them, then she would put them down in the plate from the pan. And they would be soaking in the blood of the cow or whatever it comes from. So I would say, Mom, don't forget, I want lots of blood. This is a person who would one day become a devotee. Could you believe that? But I did, yeah. So, therefore, yes, she would say, don't worry about it. I'll give you plenty of blood. You're going to get plenty. And if you're not a good boy, you're going to get it in another form, too. And she meant like that. So, the point is this, is that I desire those things, but the thing about it is that as we become advanced, as we become devoted, as we become more dedicated to Krishna, those coarse, gross desires, they gradually thin out to the extent that they actually disappear. You don't have them anymore. Just as a person may have desire to fight or to beat up people, to hurt people. But as you become more, more controlled, more loving, more kind, more generous, more charitable, all these different virtues, what happens is other characteristics develop. And we no longer want to perform those things just to fight for the sake of fighting, to hurt people, to be sarcastic to people, to look down at people. Those things disappear because they are negative. They split us apart. As we become more advanced in spiritual life, we want to do things and say things and do things and say things which relate us, connect us, which help us to become one in the sense of harmony. We want harmony It's nice when you have a circumstance situation and you can talk to someone and there's a harmony between you. This is constructive. It's useful and valuable. But if it's, I want to put you down and you want to put me down, then it ends up in a fight. And that's your usual barroom brawl. One person is talking about his favorite baseball team. And the other one says, no, that's not a good, he didn't do that. He didn't hit 10 home runs in 2 weeks. He says, yes, he did. No, he didn't. Yes, and before you know it, they're pushing each other. One goes outside to his car, opens the trunk, and pulls out a gun. And he said, did he or didn't he? He did. And we have one less person in this world. That's how it happens. Because people are identified, we're coming to that now, identify with the body. And they feel that whatever they know, whatever they say, whatever they do, is what? Whatever they do, whatever they say, is me. And if you insult me, you hurt me, you look down at me, you harm me, any of these, I feel it's a threat to my identity. It's a threat to my ego. Because you're, in a sense, putting me low. I want to be high. Everybody wants to be big and strong and great and glorious and wonderful. And if somehow he's put down, then he feels shamed. He feels criticized. He feels small, indifferent, insignificant. Who wants to feel that? Everyone wants to feel big shot. So therefore, he gets upset. And he says, who are you saying that to? I'm saying it to you. And before you know it, there's a fight. Each one wanting to prove to the other that he's superior, he's bigger, he's greater, he's grander, more wonderful. But that's not what we are, as I will be coming. We are something much greater than all those things which come and go with the seasons. The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires, and the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. The tiger wanted to enjoy the blood of another animal, and therefore by the grace of the Lord, the material energy supplied him the body of the tiger with facilities, as you mentioned, you know, with the teeth and the claws and the big strong body, supplied him with the body of a tiger with facilities for enjoying blood from another animal. Similarly, a living entity desiring to get the body of a demigod in a higher planet can also get it by the grace of the Lord. But how do we get that? Coming to it. And if he is intelligent enough, he can desire to get a spiritual body to enjoy the company of the Lord. And he will get it. So let me go back to the demigods for a few seconds, because sometimes people, they tell me, they say, well, you know, I need money. I want to get a brand new car, and I don't have enough money. So how do you get money? I hear that the demigods can give you the money. The demigods can give you the money. So how do I get a demigod to give me money? So first of all, we have to understand that there, in the Vedic teachings, there are certain ceremonies, there are certain sacrifices, there are certain exercises that one can do to please the demigods, and by so pleasing them, they in turn, as it mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, will please you and will help you to get what you want. So that's, of course, one way. Now, when it comes to the demigods, how does one even become a demigod? Why are some people demigods? We know that demigods have special powers. We know that, and they live in special planets. Planets such as the sun planet, the moon planet, or some of these other planets that we know of, you know, Mars and Mercury and Jupiter and all of these. So how do you get to those? And also, they're very highly facilitated. They get the best of food, best of weather, best of everything. But of course, it only lasts for a certain amount of time. After, and that's what I'm coming to now. How do we become a demigod if that's what you want? We don't recommend that. It is a very small accomplishment. But in truth, you are more powerful than most people on earth. You have to acquire what is known as, sorry, material credits. For example, you go to the bank. You want to buy a car. It's going to cost you $20,000. So every week, you make a deposit in the bank of, let's just say, $100 or $200. And then at the end of the year, you have a certain accumulation. And then you keep accumulating till you acquired $20,000 in the bank. Now you are ready to buy the car. You have the credit to buy the car. So you go in, so you have credit there, you have a checkbook, you go to the store or the car dealer, and you write a check for $20,000. He takes your check, you get the car. So what was it? You took credits, and the credits kept mounting and adding up until finally you were able to have that degree of wealth, that car, whatever it was, a Toyota or whether it was a Subaru or any of those things. So it came by an accumulating of credits, right? So same thing with the demigods. To become a demigod, you have to accumulate what is called pious credits. Pious credits mean doing things that are creditable and that are calculated as credits so that if you want to be, for example, an assistant to the sun god or an assistant to Indra, the rain god, do you have enough credits to get there? And if and when we do have enough credits to get there, and that's what our desire is, as it's mentioned here, Krishna satisfies our desire. And we are transported to that arena or that place where these demigods go. Now, if you wanted to be, you had a fondness for the moon god or a fondness for the sun god, then we will be taken to his planet in due course after we have left this body. And we will stay there for a certain amount of time. Now, how much time are we going to stay there for? As long as the credits last. Just as if you want to buy a particular car, you have to have so much money. And if you have the money, you get the car. But that doesn't mean that it will be repaired freely. If something breaks down, you have to have it repaired. It means you have to have more money to buy repair services. So therefore, that has to be done. So therefore, these credits are what enable us to obtain things. And if we can obtain those things, we can do that. Now, to be a demigod, we have to be able to have enough credits for that particular position. There are very high demigods, like we have, Indra and Chandraloka, Surya. These are very high-level demigods. But then they have assistants working under them. Now, we may have acquired only enough credits to be an assistant. Maybe we can work up to being a full-fledged demigod. So anyway, we get to be an assistant. That's no small position, by the way, at least amongst the demigods. To us as devotees, it really doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter. So this is the way one becomes a demigod. He acquires credits, and those credits enable him to stay a certain amount of time. When that time wears out, as it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, he no longer is fit, he no longer is qualified to remain as a demigod in that planet. So what happens is that he dies to that planet, so to speak, and he is transferred back to Earth, generally, to go and acquire or reacquire more credits for whatever he wants. Now, at this time, he may say, no, I don't want to be a demigod anymore. It became boring after a certain amount of time. So demigod business is out. Now, he finds out that there's eternal happiness, eternal bliss. Hey, that sounds good, because the bliss or pleasure I got up there, it didn't last. It only lasted for a certain amount of time, for 10,000 years. And here I am. I have to work all over for this. So those credits are totally useless for a devotee. A devotee simply wants the eternal. Eternal love, eternal life, eternal service. Jivera Swarupa Hoi Krishneta Nitya Das. It is the constitutional position of the living entity to be an eternal servant of whom? Of God. So, and what is the benefit? Sorry. I just said one of the benefits is that it's eternal. You stay with God. It's not like, well, God says to you, well, you've been here about 10,000, 100,000 years. It's back time for you to go back. No, there's no going back to earth. As Krishna says, it's an eternal position. And you stay there. If, of course, Krishna wants you, because you have a charitable nature, and he'd like you to go back to the earth to help out certain people who are suffering, he'll ask, like Prabhupada, would you like to go and help out these people? They're really suffering. Yeah, well, do you want that? Yeah, I want that. So he goes and he does the Lord's work. But it's not compulsive. It's not something that he has to do. He does it out of charity, out of kindness, out of sweetness, out of compassion. That's his reason for doing that. So let me finish up this. Are there any questions on this so far? No? Yeah, it's all clear? I hope. Similarly, a living entity desiring to get the body of a demigod in a higher planet can also get it by the grace of the Lord. And if he is intelligent enough, he can desire to get a spiritual body to enjoy the company of the Lord. That's where to go, and that's what I was just talking, because that's an eternal position. And being an eternal position, it means your bliss is eternal. It means our peace is eternal. It means our knowledge is eternal. It's not like it comes and goes as it does with demigods, as it goes with persons on earth. It's a permanent position. We don't have that now, Prabhu. There's no need for walking around with the microphone. Why you do it? There's not time for questions yet. I'm still doing the reading. Thank you. By the way, that need not be done. When it's time for questions, please get the mic and give it to the person. It's okay, continuing where? The living entity is desiring is like dreaming of a golden mountain. A person knows what a mountain is, and he knows also what gold is. Out of his desire only, he dreams of a golden mountain. And when the dream is over, he sees something else in his presence. He finds in his awakened state that there is neither gold nor a mountain. And what to speak of a golden mountain? The different positions of the living entities in the material world under the multifarious manifestations of bodies are due to the misconception of mine and I. If I think I'm the body, if I think that's me, if I think that these glasses are mine, this is a misconception. I own nothing, although legally you can say, yes, I own things. But inherently, basically, I own nothing because Krishna is the owner of all. When we leave this body, we leave the earth, water, fire, air, ether, it goes into the air. Who owns that? Krishna. Krishna owns everything. And once we understand that we are nothing more than the servant of Krishna, we are the helper of Krishna, the assistant of Krishna, then we're rightly situated. And if somebody says, hey, you're a fool, you don't get upset because you know this body which just spoke, whether it's a fool or a wise man, is meaningless in either case, because the real meaning is, who am I? I am the loving servant of the Supreme Lord. And that's all that counts. And as long as I am the loving servant, I try my very best to please Krishna, satisfy Krishna, and give him what he wants. The different positions of the living entities in the material world under multifarious manifestations of bodies are due to the misconception of mine and I. The karmi thinks of this world as mine. And the jnani thinks, I am everything. Why? Because he thinks he's God. If you're God and you're God and you're God, well then, we're all God. And therefore everything is me. And me is everything. So this is a false philosophy, and Srila Prabhupada batted it down wholeheartedly in almost every one of his pages in his books. The whole material conception of politics, sociology, philanthropy, altruism, etc., conceived by the conditioned soul, is on the basis of the misconceived I and mine. Everyone is thinking, I am a sociologist, I am a philanthropist, I am an altruist, I am this, I am a socialist. I am I am nothing. That's what my real position is. Nothing except the living soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. That is my position. And being my position, I should be very proud of it in the sense that I'm connected to the greatest of the greatest of the greatest, namely Krishna. What's so bad about that? Even if I feel very small next to Krishna, I'm still connected to Krishna, and that should make me feel great and greater than the greatest, because he is the greatest, and I'm a part of that. Okay? I'm almost finished. The whole material conception of politics, sociology, philanthropy, altruism, etc., conceived by the conditioned souls, is on the basis of this misconceived I and mine, which are products of a strong desire to enjoy material life. That's what it's all about. You get a strong desire and you can't get rid of it. You get out of here, please don't. Yeah. Very often in those conditions, people ask me, well, what do you do when you get such a strong desire? It gets so much pleasure, gets so much prestige, so much power, so much this. Well, how do you get rid of it? You beg the Lord to give him your mercy. And when he gives you the mercy, you feel detachment from it. You feel as if you're not a part of it anymore. He can do that. If we try to do it ourselves, we can't, because we're already embodied, we're already involved, we're already attached. But he, not being attached and having the power, he can withdraw you. He can get you away from it, because he doesn't have that, and we do. Last sentence, under different conceptions of socialism, nationalism, family affection, and so on and so forth, is all due to forgetfulness of the real nature of the living entity, and the real nature being spirit, soul. And the whole misconception of the bewildered living entity can be removed by the association of Shukdeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit, as all this is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's why it is said that we should try to associate with great sages and receive their blessings, their benedictions, their vibrations, and all those things help to withdraw us from those things to which we are attached, and therefore we can then be free of them finally and forever. Thank you very much. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Anybody has a question, you can come up and ask. No problem. You're welcome. Haribol.